Immigration is a hot-button issue in Charlotte, especially in the race for Mecklenburg County Sheriff. And as we prepare for the May 8th primary, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about 287G, about immigration and deportation? Help guide WFAE's reporting by submitting a question now at WFAE.org. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The need for mental health services in our schools has never been more apparent. All of the perpetrators in recent mass shootings at schools have come from the ranks of students and other young people, and all of them have struggled with behavioral issues. We know that 75 to 80% of children in need of mental health services don't receive them. We also know that when they do have access to them, 70 to 80% of those young people get that help at school. And the mental health issues that need addressing aren't just those that lead to mass shootings, but to teen suicide, the second leading cause of death among younger people, as well as less critical issues, at least less critical on the surface. School psychologists are on the front lines when it comes to dealing with this. They are the ones who help shape policies and put them into practice. So this hour, we hear from several of those people from different districts around our area about what is available in nearby schools and what is being done to increase the availability of help. Cindy Shaw is a school psychology specialist with Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Amy Lauder is a psychological services coordinator with Cabarrus County Schools. Thank you for driving down here this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jane Leota is a licensed professional counselor in the Fort Mill Schools. You had a tough drive this morning, and
thank you
for being here. And Melissa Reeves is an associate professor at Winthrop College, a nationally certified school psychologist, and immediate past president of the National Association of School Psychologists. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning. All of you get a little closer to those microphones. They are your only friend in this room. In the absence of working with an individual who clearly demonstrates that they have psychological problems, and I don't know how often you come into contact with serious problems among students in schools, but in the absence of that, what is the function of a school psychologist? I'm not sure. I'll start with you, Melissa, because you've been here before.
Yeah. We actually do a variety of different things, and we have advanced graduate level training. One of the primary roles that we do is that we assess students for various learning and social, emotional, and mental health challenges that they may have. Sometimes they qualify for additional special education services, sometimes they do not, but we're really assessing to figure out what is kind of the root of the challenges that they're having and what can we do about that. We also are trained in to do consultation with teachers. We're trained to do classroom observations and help teachers with classroom management. We're also trained to do mental health counseling, behavior interventions, so a variety of different things. But I think one of our challenges, particularly as school psychologists, is that many school districts out there still use this primarily just for testing, for special education eligibility, and we have a whole nother skill set that really can bridge the academic with the social, emotional, and the mental health. And our skill set goes untapped many times.
I was going to ask if different systems view school psychologists in different ways and if they mm-hmm. use you in different ways. So let me just go around the table here, and I'll start with you, Amy, because you're in Cabarrus County. How does Cabarrus use – does every school in Cabarrus County have a psychologist? And how does the system use you and view you, and what do they tell you what you're supposed to do?
So in Cabarrus County, the school psychologists are very fortunate because we're able to provide comprehensive psychological services. We've adopted the new model using the NASP practice model, where we do try to utilize counseling, consultation, behavioral consultation, academic consultation. We do individual and small group counseling. We're able to do evaluations for special education disabilities. We partner in Cabarrus, we're especially able to partner with our counselors and our social workers. Mm-hmm. We've been able, over the last couple years, we provide we call it a SISP, is a Specialized Instructional Support Personnel. That's how ESSA, which is the Every Student Succeeds Act, that's how it defines the psychologist, counselor, social worker, sometimes school nurses and school resource officers. And we provide that support at every school.
Every school.
Every school is able, from kindergarten through 12th grade, to have this level of support in Cabarrus County.
What about Fort Mill?
In Fort Mill, the school psychologist's role is essentially, it's a lot of evaluation for learning disabilities and so on. However, everyone is trained, like Melissa said, in mental health counseling, crisis intervention. But when there's a child, when there's a child that we know is having difficulty, it starts with the school psychologist, and then she brings a team together and so on. But they're at the root of where things begin.
And CMS is the 9,000-pound elephant in the room. So, Cindy, talk about what happens there.
Well, I could say ditto to everything that Amy shared about things that are happening in Cabarrus County. One of the things that I like to point out in addition is a big initiative in North Carolina right now is developing multi-tiered systems of support within all of our school buildings. School psychologists are the only professionals who work in a public school setting who are specifically trained to support the building of a multi-tiered system of support framework within a school. And I think, so, you know, certainly we encourage and try to support our psychologists and CMS to provide a range of direct services to students. We also have expertise in indirect services that I think are important right now, especially as we deal with the mental health challenges, behavioral challenges that many of our students have.
I think that may come as a surprise to a lot of people that many students have these challenges, and that's why on your website at Cabarrus County Schools, Amy, there's a question that you guys wrote on your own website. Why do we need school psychologists? And I suppose there's an answer to that many people don't know. Why do we need? Is it self-evident?
Well, I think a lot of it's what we've said. It's just they're trained, well-trained individuals who can really respond to the needs of schools. They're trained in education, but they're trained in psychology. So they're psychologists who work in the schools, and that's a really big attribute for an employee of a school system to have. It's that knowledge and that piece, the problem-solving, the database decision-making. Those are really important criteria for helping school systems understand what's happening.
And Melissa, as the former past president, well, the immediate past president of the National School, I'm going to get this wrong, National Association of School Psychologists, what role do they play in all of this? Are there national standards that you recommend that are followed in all schools because of your organization? How does that work?
Yeah. The first part is that we have actually established a recommended ratio. And the ratio recommended by the National Association of School Psychologists is 1 to no more than 700 students. In North Carolina, the ratio we have right now in schools is 1 to 2,100 students.
What was your recommendation again?
1 to no more than 700 students. So 1 school psychologist to no more than 700 students. And North Carolina's ratio is 1 school psychologist to 2,100 students.
We're 3 times worse than what you're recommending.
Exactly. And unfortunately, that's pretty common across the country. We need more funding for school psychologists in schools, because what we're seeing across the country is an increase in anxiety disorders. We're seeing an increase in depression. We're seeing children coming to school with much more difficulties with emotional regulation, anger management strategies. They're struggling with conflict resolution. Many are struggling in social skills because so many are on devices these days that they really don't know how to personally relate to people or how to follow schedules or routines. We're seeing an increase in the bullying and cyberbullying. And unfortunately, we're seeing an increase in suicidal ideation and also self-harm and then drug use. So
but you're painting a very bleak picture here. I'm not going back to school.
But there are things we can do.
Okay.
It's tough.
So if the ratio in North Carolina is one psychologist for
2,100 students,
what's the ratio at CMS?
Our ratio is pretty much aligned with the state ratio right now, 1 to about somewhere right around 2,100.
Cabarrus.
1 to 1,800 this year.
Fort Mill.
Well, we have one in every school, so now we're doing pretty well.
Is that exceptional for South Carolina, or are you over the curve?
That's a rarity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we do utilize a multi-tiered system of support. So not only do we have 15 psychologists, we have 6 behavior interventionists, we have 6.6 mental health therapists. We just recently got approval. We used to have 3.6. We just had approval for 3 more. So we're doing pretty good.
As you were all talking about this, and as you talked about the ratio, Melissa, of what you're recommending and what we actually have in terms of the psychologist to the number of students, I don't recall ever meeting a school psychologist in my entire history in school, either in grade school or middle school or high school. Is your presence in the schools a recent phenomenon?
I never met a school psychologist either. I think it's I wouldn't call it a recent phenomenon, but I think that from the time I finished high school till now, there's been a growing number of school psychologists within our schools. So I think the experience of younger people is that they do, if they don't meet the psychologist, they at least know that there is a psychologist.
Is the growing number of school psychologists indicative of a recognition of a problem that has always been there, or because the problems are, for whatever reason, increasing? Well, Melissa?
I think it's a combination of both. School psychologists have always been around, but we tend to work behind the scenes, and we don't really require a lot of recognition, but we've really done both. We're really trying to decrease the stigma of mental health and open the door to communication, to be more proactive, and to give students permission to that it's okay to reach out for help. On the flip side of that, what we're also doing as a profession is we're really increasing our advocacy efforts to make students and parents and teachers more aware of who we are and what we can do. And we're also trying to really educate school boards, superintendents, and principals about the expanded services that we can provide. So we're seen as more than just testers for special education, but that they see that we can do a whole lot more.
Except for Fort Mill, Amy and Cindy, given the ratio of psychologists to the number of students and the litany of problems that Melissa just mentioned that students face in terms of their mental health, are a lot of students, in your opinion, falling through the cracks? Amy.
I think that students have needs, whether they're falling through the cracks or whether it's they're being addressed at school. I think there are just so many needs. We can't feasibly meet all the needs with the current staffing ratios. I think if we're able to get more resources through people, through funding sources and supports right. for that, I think that helps the situation.
Cindy, go ahead.
I think what I would say about that, I mean, I agree again with what Amy has said. We're coming off a long period of time where what we were emphasizing were scores on high-stakes testing. You know, we want everybody to pass. And you know, my experience in schools is when that was happening, you know, there was less of an emphasis on addressing the social-emotional needs of our students. And in some ways, it felt like we forgot that if we don't address those social-emotional needs, that our students are not going to make the kind of gains and the kinds of scores that we want them all to see. You know, you asked about falling through the cracks. I mean, you know, it depends on what you mean by falling through the cracks.
Not getting the help they need, not even being recognized as having needed help, that help.
Absolutely. I think they are, and I think that that shows in some of the struggles that, you know, many of our students have, the chronic absenteeism, the dropout rate. You know, I think those are students that we need to reach, and if we don't reach them.
In the aftermath of the shooting in Florida, that's why we're talking about this, to be honest with you, but in the aftermath of that, a lot of suggestions on what to do about schools have been passed around, and I want to come back and talk about that and where mental health fits in to all of that, because I'm not hearing a lot about that. We'll come back in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the need for school psychologists, the appalling ratio of psychologists to students that we have in North Carolina when you compare it to the national recommendations of that. And we're talking about all this with 3 school psychologists and the past president of the National Association of School Psychologists, Associate Professor at Winthrop University, Melissa Reeves. Jane Liotta is here from Fort Mill Schools, where she is a licensed professional counselor, Amy Lauder, psychological services coordinator for Cabarrus County Schools, and Cindy Shaw, school psychology specialist at CMS. In the aftermath of the shooting in Florida, there have been a lot of suggestions about what we do to protect the kids that we have in our schools. Among them, the president's suggestion to put more guns in the hands of teachers in the schools, which has gone over like a lead balloon among most educators. The idea that we need to harden our schools. And I know that Clayton Wilcox, CMS superintendent, has asked for $8 million or something like that. After already receiving, he didn't receive it, his predecessors received money to harden schools after Sandy Hook. So I'm not sure where the $8 million, how you can spend $8 million on the hundreds of schools that we have in Mecklenburg County, many with open campuses, and fortify them. I'm not sure how you do that, and that's probably the challenge. What I'm not hearing a lot about here is improving this ratio, recognizing that the kids who have perpetrated these incidents are not well and need help, and many of them probably fell through the cracks, went unrecognized. If that $8 million that we're about to spend on walls and whatever were spent on school psychologists, would that have an impact? Who would like to handle that? Cindy, I'll start with you.
You know, absolutely, I think it would have an impact, without a doubt. I would be remiss, though, if I didn't say that I don't think that school psychologists can do it by ourselves. I mean, we have counselors in all of our buildings. We have social workers in many of our Title I buildings. And
what's a Title I building?
Those are schools that are designated low income, okay. high numbers of students, okay, who are coming to us in poverty. Their ratios are just as abysmal, and to really effectively support the mental health needs of all of our children in our schools, we need all of those groups at the table working together to address the needs that come to us, because we bring a different perspective and a different skill set. I will say one of the things that we're doing right now in CMS is working with a interdepartmental team that includes psychologists, counselors, social workers, our school discipline experts, look at what are our comprehensive supports from a prevention standpoint all the way up through the highest level of mental health need. And we're doing that because we recognize it was a need, but also our State Board of Education last April passed a policy calling on districts to look at what kinds of comprehensive supports they have for behavioral and mental health needs and identify the strengths that they've got, what's going well, identify the holes, and start working toward filling those holes with the supports that kids need. And I think that that there's a huge interest right now among our school board, our upper-level administrators, including Dr. Wilcox, to strengthen the behavioral and emotional supports for our students.
Melissa, you were talking off the air about this multi-tiered systems of approach, or of support, rather. Mm-hmm.
MTSS.
What does that mean?
Yeah, and this is really a model that many educational agencies and the National Association of School Psychologists is really advocating for. And visualize it as a triangle. So we refer to it as MTSS, or multi-tiered systems of support. And that is really looking at, for all schools and school districts to be looking at their programming at the universal level. And is it including social emotional learning curriculums, prevention, wellness promotion, universal screenings for academic, behavioral, and emotional barriers, implementation of very strong evidence-based curriculums that meet the academic needs of all students, because we know when we can eliminate academic frustrations, we also can decrease some of the behavioral issues. Having universal monitoring systems in place to really be proactive and notice students when they're starting to struggle early on, and then really engaging in database decision making. So looking at our academic and our social, emotional, and our behavioral data and saying, what is this telling us and what more do we need to do? At the middle level of the triangle, which is tier two, we call that where then you notice students where those universal supports in programming are not enough for them, and we may need to meet in small group and provide, you know, more directive services academically or socially, emotionally. And then the top tier of the triangle is for those kids where tier one and tier two have still not been enough, and they need those intensive academic or socially, emotional, mental health
services. So is this your pie in the sky wish in the best of all possible worlds model, or is this actually taking place in schools around the country?
It's both. It's many schools are starting to embrace it, and they've started the implementation, or they are in the process of implementing. Others are starting to get on
because
board,
and I ask that because, as I said at the beginning, according to figures I believe your organization supplied, 75% to 80% of students around the country who need psychological services don't get them,
right?
And that those that do, 70% to 80% of the people that do get them from school. And
right.
You talked, Cindy, a minute ago about social and emotional needs. And we've talked about school psychologists. We just talked about this pyramid model of what should happen in the schools. Where are the parents in all of this? Don't they recognize that their child has emotional and psychological and social needs that aren't being met, or they're having problems in those areas that are affecting either school performance or behavioral issues? Where are they in all of this?
I think that parents don't know what to do. I think sometimes they don't know what their schools are doing.
They know that you exist in their schools?
It depends. It depends on what the psychologist has been able to do in their current setting. If the psychologist has been involved, for example, using the MTSS approach of the framework, if they've been involved in problem-solving team meetings, the parents are there with the psychologist, with the counselor, the social worker, administrators, and you're problem-solving about this is where our student is right now, where does he need to be, how long is it going to take him to get there, what services have we tried, what do we still need to try to get the student to move from one place to another.
You'll be pleased, Amy, that Amber on Facebook writes, Cabarrus County school counselors are great. My son is doing so much better thanks to them. If it weren't for them, I would not have figured out that my son had anxiety. They have made school a safe place for him to be. That's a nice comment. That's nice to hear. You've been a school psychologist. I don't want to age you here, but I think for 33 years, and I think most of the school psychologists around the table have been doing this more than a month and a half. They've been doing this for a while. So in the time that the four of you have been school psychologists, have you seen an increase in the number of young people who really could benefit from your help? Let me ask you that question, Jane.
Yes, we have. And just to clarify, I'm not a school psychologist. I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I lead the mental health program for the district. But there has been such an increase over the past, I would say, 4 to 5 years that it's mind-boggling. And so that's what...
Why?
Well, I think a lot of it is anxiety, but a lot of it is fear.
What are they anxious about?
I think they're anxious about so many different things, and most of it is what's going on in the world. Also, social media just keeps them wound up constantly. So there's just...
Yeah, and the academic demands are getting greater and greater.
Yes.
I have a sophomore in high school and a freshman in college, and for those kids that are looking at post-high school education, they now are walking away with the message that I have to have over a 4.0.
And is that even possible?
Well, exactly. And it is with AP classes. But I know one of my children came home and said, I have a friend that has a 4.6 GPA. And I'm like, how do you even get a 4.6 GPA? Where does it stop? And I think that is part of it, is you have all of the social media challenges and they're being barraged on top of academic demands. And then you have the students that don't have the resources needed to be successful in school. So they kind of get the message, am I even valued within our society if I'm not going to college? And so they're just, it's a lot. It's tough.
And what I was going to say, I think our schools reflect the turmoil that's going on in our society in general, economic hard times that we've had in our country. Our kids are experiencing all that, and they bring those struggles to school with them, and they need support. I think parents do the best that they can with what they've got to work with.
This could be my incorrect impression, but you seem, Jane, to be representative of a school system that's probably in good working order in a part of our area that seems to be higher economic and et cetera. I could be wrong about that, but of Cabarrus and CMS, you seem to be at the top of the pyramid for a lot of your students. Is that true?
We are getting there. I think we've had a plan in place for the past 5 years, and we're getting there quickly. And I think, you know,
but I mean, economically, socially, is that the case? It just seems that Fort Mill is a confined area of relatively affluent people. Is that true?
There are many, many pockets of poverty. So we have a combination of different levels going, socioeconomic levels going on. I do think that, you know, I give a lot of credit to our school board for just being on top of things, and a lot of parents for getting involved. And I agree, some parents are very involved and will call us. And
how many schools in the Fort Mill system?
15.
How many average students in a school?
In each school?
In each school, average.
There's 2,200 in each high school.
Okay.
About 1,000 in middle school.
What about Cabarrus County? How many schools do you have?
There are over 40 schools.
And how many students?
About 30, just under 33,000.
Wow. And CMS?
Well, it's kind of hard to
a lot
keep
of schools,
track.
A lot of
I'm
schools.
Thinking it's somewhere around 168, 170. Our larger high schools have around 3,000 students. We've got elementary schools with 1,000 students. So.
I asked this because one of the things that we talked about on a previous program with regard to why these incidents of school shootings, et cetera, are happening is somebody put forth the idea that there's a loss of a sense of community, that things have just gotten too big. When you had local schools and you'd walk down the street and you'd see your teacher and the teacher would see you and your parents and everybody knew each other, you could spot these problems and nip them in the bud before they happen. And you also felt like you belonged to something. When a school has 3,000 students, you're not going to personally know the principal. I knew the principal in my school, but I don't know that you would have an opportunity to meet the principal outside of an assembly. So they don't know you. You don't know them. You fall through the cracks that way. Have we just gotten too big? Big is not necessarily better.
In some respects, yes. But also you can make a big school feel small. And I think that's why we really advocate for the MTSS model, because what you do with that model at the universal level is you are really focusing and putting resources and attention onto social emotional programming that builds a positive school climate and integrates what we call positive behavior supports, which is setting really clear behavior expectations, but you're also weaving in empathy and collaboration and acceptance and really working with the students and the staff on how to be connected to each other. So through that model, you can make a big school feel small. And Boston Public Schools has a phenomenal model right now that they are implementing, and they're also the size of CMS, where they have very much implemented this MTSS model. They've shifted the role of the school psychologist from primarily tier 3 interventions to tier 1 and tier 2. So really working at that universal level at the schools to bring in good social emotional programming that builds positive school climate. They also were providing services for small groups of students, whether it be grief and loss, anxiety groups, anger management groups, social skills groups, friendship groups. They're really getting in there. Instead of just testing for special ed, they're involved at tier 1 and tier 2 services. Then what they've done kind of is that they've, at the tier 3 then, is they've collaborated with community mental health providers that have the expertise in intensive therapeutic interventions for those kids that have more significant issues. So by just shifting how they use school psychologists and implementing this comprehensive MTSS model, they've seen an increase in academic scores and a decrease in behavior.
And the good news is that when you implement an MTSS framework within your school, you can identify kids early who are at risk for developing serious mental health issues, and you can intervene. And we, I've been to presentations where we see that it makes a difference.
Amy,
Go ahead. I would say, we see increases in academic scores, and we also see increases in the ability to cope with life's problems.
Mike, you asked a question earlier about how can we address mental health in schools. I think this kind of ties into it as well. But we can build fortresses that are locked with security guards. We can build schools that are smaller, but until we get to the hearts and minds of kids and helping them understand how to interrelate with each other, we're not going to be able to see changes.
Yeah, these conversations that we and other programs have been having about mental health issues and about keeping kids safe in school have been provoked by the school shootings that we've had a series of around the country over time. But it would seem to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is not the overriding problem that the lack of mental health services is posing. That's the thing that gets all the attention. The real thing is what you just talked about, Cindy. In a paper that Mental Health Services at CMS wrote, they stress increased that the help provided by school psychologists results in increased student achievement over time, improved attendance, decreased suspension, positive outcomes associated with psychological counseling. All of those are, and that takes away the focus from this dangerous activity. I think it's even more important, isn't it? Because it's talking about your lifelong success. If you succeed in school,
absolutely,
your chances at lifelong success improve.
Absolutely.
Would it also say if you have lifelong success that your mental health lifelong will improve?
Absolutely. Yes, I agree with that. And I agree with something that Melissa just talked about, is that when you have these tiers of support in each school, the children do feel safer, and it is like a little community for them. And then as we draw on other community services, it even becomes just a more involved safety zone for kids to be in. Do we always catch kids? You know, not always. Sometimes we get them when they are definitely mentally ill, and that's when the mental health therapists come in, and we have to diagnose and we have to provide treatment, and not just, you know, come in and see me once a week. You know, we're seeing them once or twice a week for many months to treat their mental illness. But I guess my point was, it takes a village.
In previous programs we've done about mental illness, the term that many professionals like to use is behavioral problems as opposed to mental problems. Is that because there's a stigma attached to the mental aspect of this? And is that why we're gravitating toward behavioral definitions? I have 10 seconds.
I think that there are behavioral issues and mental health issues, but if I were to give you a cup of...
Give it to me when we come back from the break. I threw you a curve, and that's not fair. We'll come back in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about school psychologists and the need for mental health professionals in our schools, and why there is that need and what kinds of needs present themselves and how many fall through the cracks, and the fact that it's not just the people who take automatic weapons to school and cause havoc and death and destruction. It's a much more pervasive problem, and one with tentacles out into the society at large, which I want to talk about in this segment with Melissa Reeves, associate professor at Winthrop University and an immediate past president of the National Association of School Psychologists, Cindy Shaw, school psychology specialist at CMS, Jane Liotta, licensed professional counselor in the Fort Mill Schools, and Amy Louder, psychological services coordinator for Cabarrus County Schools, who I gave literally 5 seconds to answer a very important question before the last break. So let me give you another crack at it. Are behavioral issues, which some people like to use that term as opposed to mental health issues, one and the same?
I'm going to give you an example. If I were to give you a cup of cranapple juice, mm-hmm. you'd be able to taste the flavor of the cranberry, the flavor of the apple. But if I were to say, pour out the cranberry and apple and separate them out, you can't do that very well. This is the same kind of thing with behavior, mental health, social emotional. There are various components and different needs there, but whenever you look at the comprehensive child, it's all together. You have to take the whole package.
So we were talking about the benefits that CMS, and I think you all agreed with the philosophy that they apply, that there are all these benefits to mental health professionals getting involved with increasing student achievement and lowering the dropout rate, et cetera. Since increasing test scores and educational outcomes seems to be the focus of every governor in every state and every legislature in every state that funds public education in every state, and it seems to me that this positioning the role of a mental health professional in helping to achieve those goals, is this just, that's the question here. Is it just a matter of helping the legislature and governors to understand what it is that you do and the benefits that you provide that would allow them to see, well, hey, if we want to get better test scores and have better graduation rates and keep our graduates here and get them jobs, we better help them with their mental health.
I think we're seeing a body of data now that is showing exactly what you're saying. So it's getting easier to make that argument, I believe, especially after, you know, some of the terrible things that have happened in school districts across the country with extreme violence.
And in truth, I don't want to come across as an NRA supporter, but I don't want to come across as an NRA detractor either. It is the fact that people who are not well, who also have possession of a gun, cause these problems. If you're well and have a gun, you in all likelihood are not going to cause this problem, correct? So if you're a gun advocate, wouldn't you also be a mental health advocate?
Yeah, I mean, the two are definitely intertwined because I think it's also important to realize that most individuals that have mental health challenges also are not violent. So there is that component of when you have challenges coupled with access, yeah, it is definitely can be a deadly combination.
And the young people who have taken up arms in these schools have been described in the aftermath as isolated, depressed. Some have been bullied. But then there are a lot of kids in school who feel isolated, mm-hmm. who go through periods of depression, who are, in fact, bullied. What's the difference between those students and the ones that pick up a gun?
Usually when they get to the point of either wanting to harm themselves or wanting to harm others, they have reached a point of hopelessness, helplessness, desperation, or they just don't see any other way
out. Is that difficult to spot by a teacher, by a fellow student? Because I don't think school psychologists see these kids every day. Yeah. Teachers do.
In some cases, it can be difficult to spot if they are the type of individual that are very secretive behind the scenes. But mm-hmm. in most cases, there are definitely signs and there is a progression. It's a matter of those signs being brought to the attention of the adults so we can be more proactive. And when you look at the latest, shootings that have taken place, these have been individuals with very complex mental health issues for a long period of time. And I think where we struggle in schools is we're good at identifying these students for the most part. Where we struggle is there's not enough resources to provide good quality interventions. So even when we identify, and believe me, we have stopped many incidences from happening by identification of students early on, where we struggle is we don't have the resources to meet a lot of the intensive needs. And that's where we kind of run into roadblocks and limitations.
So when something like an Adam Lanza situation in Sandy Hook takes place, or this kid in Florida comes in and shoots up the place, these people are relatively identified as crazy. They're mentally ill. And you don't want to be in that category. So if you're having mental health problems, there's probably still a stigma to attach to this. Ray on Twitter says, providing mental health resources in our schools is critical, as is destigmatizing mm-hmm. mental illness. And we've talked about this on previous programs, too. But when somebody does something like this, does that increase the stigma of mental illness and reduce the chance that you might come forward and say, I'm having some of these feelings, too, and I need help, because you don't want to be in that category?
I don't think that is true. I think what's happening is children are becoming much more aware. Does that make them scared? Yes, but it also makes them look at each other. So, for instance, right now, we utilize NAMI, and they come in and they do a class in all of our high school 101 classes in the high schools. And they are teaching children about what mental health issues are and what to look for in each other, look at in themselves.
But kids, particularly from middle school on, are so concerned about self-image, so concerned mm-hmm. about fitting in, so concerned that they don't stick out like a sore thumb, that they're part of the group. If you present with these issues, doesn't that make you stick out like a sore thumb?
Well, and that's really where we need to get back to, you know, those universal social-emotional learning curriculums, to where we are destigmatizing mental health. And we're not only educating students and parents and teachers around mental health, but we're also setting the tone that it's okay to ask for help and it's okay to get help for a friend, and that mental illness or mental health challenges are treatable. And it's okay to say, I need help. This is a tough world. And there's a lot of stressors. So we're really working hard through some of the social emotional learning programming to destigmatize mental health.
Prevention efforts work.
Yes.
I mean, there's clear evidence that prevention efforts work. And so if you can do that, then you're not going to have to identify somebody as having a serious mental illness.
So Judith on Facebook writes, I think it's important to mention that the majority of youth dealing with mental health conditions are not violent, which is the point I was trying to make earlier. As Zeno emails, what are the top issues students are burdened with? Are they the same ones that the Opportunity Task Force is tackling community-wide? That's in Charlotte. I don't know whether you have similar problems in Cabarrus and Fort Mill, but what are the problems that young people, when you come in contact with a person, whether they approach you or they're referred to you, what are the majority of the problems that you deal with?
I would say anxiety and depression are probably the two greatest ones that we see, which then unfortunately can lead to suicidal ideation. So kids are incredibly...
Let's talk about that, because suicide is the second largest, biggest cause of death among young people. What is leading to these suicidal thoughts? The world is their oyster at that age. What is...
I think there are a lot of pressures on young people nowadays to succeed. I think Melissa was talking about, you know, that GPA that you need to get into the college of your choice. I mean,
so these are thoughts of I'm not good enough.
Exactly.
I'm not going to make it.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm not going to measure up to what the community expects, what my parents expect, what I expect of myself.
And with social media these days, it's a constant 24/7 in your face for these kids that somebody else has more, somebody else looks better, somebody else's life is better. So, and whether that's true or not, that's what they're being exposed to. So again, it's, am I ever going to be good enough? And then for some of our students who really lack financial resources or lack stability in the home, they struggle to even see where they have a future. And so part of it too is, you know, you've got the high achieving students that are stressed out because of the stresses of being high achieving. But then you also have those individuals that are really lacking in some of the basic needs. And some of them just don't feel like there's ever going to be any hope for them being able to kind of break the cycle and, you know.
If I could also add, I think that the research is also showing our DNA is being altered by this. Our brains are being affected by the trauma. There's a lot of research on the neurobiology
what
of
trauma?
Toxic stress.
Trauma, the trauma of stress?
Of stress, yep. Mm-hmm. And of all the traumatic events that can occur in a person's life. So if you're familiar with the adverse childhood experiences, the ACEs score, sometimes people call them, it talks about how whenever you are developing as a child, if you have certain experiences in your life, such as the death or divorce of a parent, witnessing domestic abuse, especially seeing your mother being abused physically, racism, bullying, violence, living with alcoholic parents, those are all indicators. And the more you have of those, the more at risk you are for chronic health problems in the future. It could take decades later until these symptoms rise to the surface.
Talk to me about the process. If a young person is having a problem, do they come to you? Is it noticed by a teacher who or a student who says, you need to talk to so-and-so because how does it come to your attention? What's the process?
Well,
start with Fort Mill.
Okay.
Talk to you, Jen.
Often they are referred by a teacher because the teachers are with them and notice that there's an issue. Sometimes their friends come and sometimes they come on their own.
What kinds of issues might a teacher see in a student that would make them think they need to see somebody like you?
They might see someone withdrawing, looking more depressed, not being very sleepy is another indicator that something's going on. You know, work deteriorating and so on.
Grades and schoolwork.
Right. So then that starts with us, with our school counselors, our guidance counselors. And then that goes on. If we feel like the grades are being affected, then we might go on then to a school psychologist where an IEP might be considered, an individual education plan. But then if there's more of a need, that it looks like we need to have a professional therapist involved, then it comes to us.
Is this voluntary? Can the student turn you down? Can they say, I don't want to be part of this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, they can.
And what kind of red flags does that raise if they don't want to talk to you?
Well, you know, I think for me, if they don't want to be involved, you just try again, and you keep them involved,
Do you talk to their parents if you think they need help and they don't want it?
Yes. Yes, we do, unless they're age 18, and then that might gets a little sticky.
Do you talk to their parents if they come to you and avail themselves of your help and you notice something? Do you talk to the parents, or is this like a doctor-patient situation where you really don't share that information?
No, definitely involve parents.
Is that because the student, you know, teenagers don't want to have their parents know anything about them, so does that cause them to be more reluctant to see and talk to you?
I mean, it may in certain situations, but parents are always involved. Now, do we have to tell them every, you know, there certainly is confidentiality in a therapeutic relationship, but parents are always involved. And
do you tell their classroom teachers that anything that you find that they should be watching for or noticing or whatever? Do you have conversations after the fact in a therapeutic situation with a student, so that the teacher is informed?
Right. There's definitely a fine line, because you don't want to be sharing all of the details, because there is that importance of confidentiality. But at the same time, you really need to work together as a team between the school, the parents, and the teachers. And the teachers need enough information to know how to best support the student and how to best approach the student in a way that they're going to be able to be supportive. And so I think, you know, in all of this, when we really focus on working as a team with the student, the parents, and the teachers, it goes back to that connectedness and that collaboration and that partnership. And when you're building relationships, it makes these conversations much easier to have.
So I have 2 minutes left, and I want to ask you specifically about two things that the National Association of School Psychologists says. And that is, they say that mental health and behavioral health services exist on a continuum, and they advocate universal screening for academic, behavioral, and emotional barriers to learning for all students. How many school systems engage in that kind of activity?
Oh, I don't know the data, but not many are doing it systematically at the universal level. And what we know is early intervention is critical.
Part of our policy that I spoke of earlier, that the school board...
At CMS?
The North Carolina School Board passed last April, has to do with looking at and incorporating universal screening for behavioral and mental health concerns.
And your organization says that good mental health is not simply the absence of illness, but also the possession of skills necessary to cope with life's challenges, family pressures,
absolutely,
pressures from the absence of a parent, homelessness, drugs in the home, guns in the home, violence in the neighborhood. All of that comes into play, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do kids get that help?
Many do, when we can open the door for the lines of communication and support. And what research very clearly shows is that even students that have a lot of the ACEs in their history, the adverse childhood experiences, it just sometimes takes one adult for them to feel connected to and to feel supported by, and we can make a difference.
So Kate on Facebook writes, thank you for mentioning the lack of resources. People want to deflect to this as a mental health issue and then turn around and refuse significant funding to address it. All this does is stigmatize those that need help without truly working to solve the problem. And Georgia on Facebook writes, everyone needs mental health care, including preventative. It teaches us how to process emotions, validate emotions, and communicate in a healthy way. Some people are born with mental disabilities or disorders, but many people have mental illness which are brought on by societal and family issues, and no one is completely immune. Would you agree with all that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We'll have to end it there. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate it. Cindy Shaw, school psychology specialist at CMS. Amy Louder, psychological services coordinator at Cabarrus County Schools. Jane Leota, licensed professional counselor at Fort Mill Schools. And Melissa Reeves, associate professor at Winthrop and immediate past president of the National Association of School Psychologists.